This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello everybody, and welcome to yet another bonus Super J cast. We are very lucky to have back with us today Fraser Marriott, the G1 Iron Man, who is approaching the final leg of his G1 tour with a mere four shows left, if I've got that right. Fraser, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, Joel. Today is a day off, so I arrived back in Tokyo last night after taking a bullet train after the Osaka show. So the road trip of about 11 days and about eight shows is over. I'd suggest that's probably the toughest part of the tour. So now I've just got to sit back, enjoy the last four shows, which should in theory be the most exciting ones. So we're feeling totally fine at the moment.
Now, on this tour you've done, you've picked up quite a lot of followers on social media, a lot of attention from the wrestling community. How are you enjoying that?
Yeah, it's good fun, actually. I think I might have mentioned sort of last time that in the past I've kept my account private, mainly because I didn't think I was going to have anything overly exciting necessarily to share, and sometimes the negativity on Twitter was a bit of a put-off. But no, this time around it's been fun. So yeah, sort of each day or after each show there's another 30 or 40 followers, which is always fun. You get different perspectives, and this time around got quite a lot of Japanese followers as well, which is making it fun. And especially when you see certain incidents or events that come up, you quite often get different opinions from both groups. So it's yeah, it's a lot of fun to bring the followers along for the ride as well. And I think the positivity has been great. So I don't think there's been a single comment along the way so far, which has made me regret that decision to open up my account.
Now, Fraser, you've just come off this unbelievable two Osaka shows, and they always seem to be, you know, top of the list when it comes to the G1 shows and the events there. Give us some highlights from your perspective from those two events, the events that we just came off of. Give me some takeaways of the highlights and maybe some lowlights for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very, very memorable weekend. And I think sort of the two shows had a very different feel about them. So on the Saturday, that was an amazing show. And I think if people aren't already aware, last time around or historically for the G1, Osaka's always just been a one-show stop. This time around, it was two shows, so you get a lot of hardcore fans travelling from Tokyo as well to be there. So you had the sort of the hardest core of the core fans there. So it made for a great atmosphere. I think Saturday, obviously, and I've had a chance today on my day off to check out your guys' own take of the weekend. That Ishii Omega match, that was just phenomenal. There had already been some outstanding matches in the G1 already, most of which Ishii himself had already been involved with, but that was quite clearly over and above what had already been those great matches. And I think the tone was set very nicely. I think most of the crowd were not really too keen on Kenny this time around. I think partly because he had so many points, so he was running away with it. And I think the thing that Kenny did great, which set up that match beautifully, was all that sort of patronizing rubbing of the head of Ishii at the start. And I think if there was any doubt about the majority being with Ishii, that just went one step further. And even there was a guy to my right who was starting off the match supporting Kenny, and he's kind of dueling with me. I tend to yell out quite a bit for whoever it is I want to win. And by the end of the match, he was shouting for Ishii even. So Ishii managed to convert fans midway through that. But that was just an amazing match. I mean, I've been fortunate enough in the last 3 years to see a lot of great matches, but oh, that's got to be right up the top of some of the very best I think I've ever seen.
Now, is the I'm sorry, just to touch on the Ishii part. And again, I know that we have a lot to talk about when it comes to that Osaka show. Is Ishii a guy who, and again, in the West, we kind of gravitate to him because he is the guy that maybe, you know, for lack of a better description, you know, he's got more guts than brains, right? He's got so much heart and so much just passion. That again, he may not get himself into the best situations, but he's always there for the fight, and his match quality is you know, off the charts, ridiculous. What's the perception of a fan there of Ishii and where he stands with the promotion?
Yeah, I think a couple of things come to mind. I mean, I think for a lot of Japanese fans, he's kind of strong style personified. And I think sort of going back in time, I think him and Shibata sort of jointly held that title. If anything, Shibata might have been even more so that way. I think with Shibata sort of unfortunately dropping out in the last 18 months or so with his head injury, Ishii's very much seen as that guy. So he is very, very popular with the fans. But the one thing I would say, sort of countering that a little bit, is in my experience, whether you're talking to Japanese male fans or female fans, very few of them, if you ask them, who's your favourite wrestler, Ishii's just not normally that one guy. It tends to be Tanahashi, Okada, Naito, Kenny, those top four guys. So Ishii's definitely a level below. And I think for me, what would be interesting is, would New Japan ever seriously consider, and I think the reality is probably not, putting that top title on him. I think perhaps Intercontinental, certainly never, it's obviously something he's had before, but he's always that level down, but he is very, very highly valued, regarded and respected by the Japanese community.
Now, a lot of people obviously are talking about the Tama Tonga situation where he jumped the barricade and attacked a fan. A lot of people thought it was a plant, and you are adamant that it wasn't a plant. So obviously you've got the best seat in the house there to give us a take on that. So what is your personal take on the Tama situation?
Yeah, well, I might give you my personal take and then also share the Japanese one, because I think you're going to be quite surprised by what the Japanese fans have been saying. I've talked to a lot of my friends directly today. I've spent quite a bit of time looking at some of the threads, and even there's been some blogs and articles written about it. My personal take was, it was interesting, and I don't know if you guys saw the undercards or not, but that played a very, very important role. So I was sitting in a row, literally just four seats down from the gentleman in question. We're in exactly the same row, and he was very, very noisy, and I could tell that most of his comments to the wrestlers were generally sort of quite negative, which is quite unusual. I think I explained in our previous podcast that the Japanese fan inclination is always respect the performers, and you don't do that kind of stuff. And I could tell that he was irritating quite a few of the people around our area, and definitely he got some responses out of the wrestlers. So when Naito was doing his slow getting ready for his match, he was yelling out, and you'll see on the undercard, I'm sure the camera shows Naito doing a bit of a tranquilo pose. And then they had the Bullet Club tag match, and I think there's a normal shenanigans that went on with that one. So that was the match Tama Tonga himself was actually in. And Tonga definitely was irritated by this guy. Before his match started, he yelled out Udasai, which is a very kind of sharp term in Japan. It kind of means you're being very noisy, you know, shut the fuck up, to be quite blunt about it. And that annoyed him before the match. Now, interestingly, when he's going off, and I haven't watched World to see if it's captured correctly or not, is when Tom was walking all the way back down to the ramp, he kind of did some wild gestures at this guy. And the guy thought a little bit that he's a little bit scared at that point. He was miles away, so Tama Tonga was literally just about to disappear over the end of the ramp, but he did a few, in inverted commas, self-harm gestures towards this guy, and he clearly had noticed him at that point. But that didn't stop this guy. He's very noisy also in Ibushi's match, and I don't know if you could see on World again. Ibushi was politely acknowledging this guy, but it was pretty excessive, especially in a Japanese context. And then, I guess going through to Fale's match where Tama Tonga did his run-in, and then this guy was yelling out again. And I thought it was kind of ballsy, given it was obvious Tama Tonga had been upset by this guy before. He sort of runs. So once Tama Tonga's done bashing Yoshihashi, I think it was, with the chair, he went to the first sort of crowd barrier with his chair and sort of leant up against it. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, he's just going to do his normal kind of pretend to threaten him, and that will be the end of it. But I looked across at the guy at that point. He was already quite nervous, and he was doing the Naito sort of tranquilo hands down stuff, because I think he genuinely thought Tama Tonga was coming for him. And Tama Tonga definitely had a look in his eyes where I thought, well, maybe he might do, but I don't seriously think he will. Then he sort of jumped over that one, and then, you know, chair in hand, he's walking over with purpose to this guy. And I thought, shit, this looks quite serious. And I'd seen this guy's sort of actions earlier in the card, and I was pretty convinced he was a legit fan. It seemed like he was not somebody planted. But when Tama Tonga's right up in front of him, I thought, okay, he'll just sort of stand there and do nothing. And again, he still got the chair in the hand, and he put the choke on the guy. And I sort of trying to half watch this and take photos at the same time, because it all happened so quickly that I figured probably not many people are going to actually get a chance to take any photos here. But that choke, I mean, I couldn't tell, obviously, not being the guy, but the choke looked quite serious, and he held it on there for a while. And the guy was really recoiling by this stage. And he's kind of an older guy. Maybe he's probably in his 50s somewhere. And I think if you're Tama Tonga as the performer, you're taking a few chances, I think, sort of ensuring, you know, this guy's got no health problems or whatever. It's a little bit risky. Then he took his hand off the choke and sort of just feigned to hit the chair. But given he had gone that far, like I honestly couldn't tell, like, where was the line going to be drawn? Like, you would have thought he's well and truly crossed whatever conventional lines have already been there. And then he proceeded eventually to walk away from that guy and hit some of the young lions over the head and then take off. But it was really, really quite surreal. And I asked the guy straight afterwards, just sort of Daijobu desu, which is, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, yeah, I'm okay. But he's definitely a bit shook up, for sure. And he didn't really say much throughout the rest of the show, all the way until the end when Tanahashi came back and he started chanting for Tanahashi again. Then after the show it's finished, I went up to the guy and said, oh, can I take a photo? And, you know, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, photo's fine, photo's fine. So I took down and I asked him, you know, Shigoto Shinihon, which is, you know, do you work for New Japan? Are you involved? He said, oh, no, just fan. And I mean, you know, he could always bullshit me, obviously, so I'm never going to know 100%, but I'm as sure as I can be that it was legit. Now, I think it did go over the edge a little bit, but I kind of liked it in a way because it was just so bizarre and so surreal that something so shocking might be what helps them out here. But if I can just continue on just for a second, on the Japanese fan side, this has been very, very interesting. They've been all completely pro Tama Tonga. This guy has been referred to online as Yaji Oji-san. Oji-san is like uncle, so I'm sure Joe over there in China, they've got a similar expression that they use for those sort of middle-aged or just past middle-aged gentlemen. And Yaji means kind of booing or hooting fan. And all of them are unanimous that his behavior, just forgetting Tama Tonga's reaction for a second, was just completely out of line. And if you go back to those comments I made in the previous podcast, he definitely stands out. And Japanese have this saying that the nail sticking up must be hammered down. And they were all unanimous that this guy sort of was completely out of line. And they've kind of seen Tama Tonga as a bit of a hero in this. And if you read some of the other threads, they all say New Japan should probably politely apologize for what happened, but ban him from any future attendances. And in addition to the photos I took kind of from the side, there was another fan, and I think you guys have seen it there as well, who was immediately behind him, who took a photo, and it had the guy's seat number on there. And a lot of them were saying, oh, we should contact New Japan and say the same thing. So I've reached out to my own friends, Japanese friends, directly. They all tend to think the same way, that there are certain expectations of the audience, and this guy crossed them. So quite surprisingly, there's very little sympathy. I mean, I saw one or two comments where people questioned whether or not New Japan should have the right to film this guy. And obviously his sort of public embarrassment sort of been, you know, broadcast internationally. But only one or two fans said that. It's very, very heavily not so much saying Tama's, you know, what Tama specifically did was great, but more just how out of line this fan was. And there's been a few other fan manner complaints that have come up today off the back of this as well. And another one that is upsetting fans, and I've seen this because I've sat next to the entrance ramp twice now on 15 of these shows, is a lot of fans will run across to the entrance ramp to try and get a hand slap or whatever from the wrestlers when they come in and out, and that's irritating a lot of Japanese fans as well, because again, that's not polite. You're supposed to sit in your seat and not block the view. So it's been quite a fascinating reaction, which I think is in quite stark contrast to your average Western fan's reaction to what went down.
Yeah, really, really interesting stuff. I'm just curious why you think people are saying that. What sort of insights does that give us, if any, into Japanese culture?
I think it's that one about sort of conforming to societal's expectations. And I talked about that expression, which is, You know, if there's a nail sticking up, you hammer it down so it's in line with, you know, the rest of the nails all acting sort of uniformly against those collective expectations. And this guy definitely would stick out. I think they might give a free pass to a gaijin acting like that, but when it's a Japanese fan, I think it's just showing that manners is a big part of Japanese society. And I think him sort of not meeting those expectations is sort of been the consistent response across both the younger and the older generations to this.
Fraser, would you say that, and again, not that you were sitting directly next to or, but you were in earshot, you could definitely hear some comments. I mean, were any of them, in your opinion, out of line or distasteful or in any way would warrant Tama Tonga to jump the rail and wrestlers to go out of their way to acknowledge this guy, or is he just a passionate fan who's again maybe stepping outside the social norms of what is considered polite in Japanese society?
I must admit, I'd probably need to speak to some of my friends to understand exactly what he was saying. I don't think my Japanese would be good enough when he's yelling it out quickly to know precisely. But certainly the feedback was his comments were very, very negative and very, very loud. And the latter point might seem a bit strange to fans, but that's also a thing about the Japanese culture as well, is it's sort of how loud are you versus others as well. And he tended to make his comments kind of before and after matches when the crowd was otherwise quiet. So it wasn't as if he was sort of just doing your conventional booing the guy you don't like at certain moments throughout the fight. But I did ask one of my friends who speaks English and Japanese very, very well, and she just said his comments were very, very negative. Now, exactly what they are, I can find out. I mean, I didn't get the sense from anything that I read that, you know, there's any particular, you know, racial or sexual slurs or anything like that. It just seemed to be over-the-top sort of negative comments from this guy. But as I say, I've been through loads of Japanese responses to this, and I'd say 95-98% of them are all quite uniform in their criticism of this guy. And so many of them are suggesting he should not be allowed to come to future shows.
Do you think, in your opinion, that there'll be any type of punishment or any type of I mean, I'm sure he got a talking to in the back, but do you think this is going to impact Tama Tonga in any way?
Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. You guys might have seen on Twitter afterwards. He did a video at the Shinkansen station going back to Tokyo where he just threw litter on the ground, which is a big sort of public no-no as well. So Tama Tonga, in his own mind at least, I don't think was moving into any steps backwards. But that said, as you guys might have seen, when I was next to the entrance ramp at Hamamatsu, I foolishly went for a two sweep with Bad Luck Fale, who reversed it with the finger on me, which was captured on New Japan World, and he sent that out on Twitter to everybody, which was kind of funny in a way. But what I did wonder about would be whether or not Tama Tonga might try and take that clip, because I think it was on World, and maybe tweet that out and sort of say, you know, I'm coming to get you. So he wasn't proud to the point that he was willing to do that. In terms of how New Japan will react to it, I'm genuinely quite mystified. I'm hoping I might catch up with one of the two other people actually associated with the company later in the week to get their own private thoughts on this, but it might be a sensitive matter, so I'm not really sure how much I'll get on that. But I do know from previous conversations, I know Ghetto in the past, at least, has been quite sensitive to some of the wrestlers' antics, and this is on a completely new level. So in the past, I think it was one of the wrestlers was telling me that Ghetto had been telling guys to swear less, although when you watch the G1, there's no real evidence of that. But then you might notice Makabe, when he does his kind of two fingers to people now, he doesn't use the middle finger anymore. He uses the index finger, which was apparently an instruction from Ghetto to say that's too offensive. So I don't know. I could really probably see that going one of two ways. There could be that view that, yeah, you took that too far. But he obviously, you know, he had time to think about it, right? I mean, he had that first altercation the first time, so he'd already made up his mind he didn't like this guy. And I could see the thought process sort of in his mind in the seconds that it unraveled, where he made a conscious decision to go, right? It's not like he just sort of sprinted over there off one particular moment. He kind of lined it up and decided to do it. So they may hit him, or they may look at the other way and say, well, maybe this was the shocking scandal or incident to get what was otherwise a pretty flat angle over. I think the other thing I'll be curious to see on Wednesday is whether any of the promos that those Tongans cut references that activity or not. And I think that probably will give us a clue in terms of, you know, what the company itself thinks about it.
Okay, moving back to the G1 talk itself, from the conversations you've had with the people you've met, how do the Japanese fans see the last few days of the G1 playing out? Who do they want to see in the final, and who do you think they want to win the whole G1?
Yeah, I think Tanahashi is the guy most popular with fans these days. I was at the show in Fukuoka, and Justin Liger was doing some pre-match build-up outside, and he's asking a lot of fans, this was an A-block show, mind you, sort of who they're all expecting and wanting to go through, and they all said Tanahashi. And he's obviously, while he's sort of been in and around the top, he's never really been the sort of one of the main two for any period of time for a good couple of years now. And I think it's been, you know, quite some time since he's been in there. So I think they're quite keen to see him go up the top of the card. And Osaka, for me, it was quite telling that, as I mentioned before, when Kenny had his match, he was top of the points table, and you got the feeling that people were not too keen for him to win again. Whereas Tanahashi was already at the top, and he was still quite strongly supported against Elgin to win as well. So I think there's big, big support for him. I got the sense also that in the show yesterday, as far as Okada goes, people were definitely wanting Evil to win that match, which obviously would have, I think if my math is right, that basically would have knocked Okada out. So I think they've felt perhaps that they've had enough of him in recent times, and probably not so excited by this new character that they'd be willing to sort of, you know, view that as a new version of him to bring him up to the top. And then the other one on the A-block side, Jay White's reaction to his latest victory was very, very flat. And that was important because there's only one of three guys left, but no one got really excited by that. So I think it's definitely Tanahashi on the A-block side. As far as B-block goes, it's quite split. You've got, you know, all three of those top guys, whether it's Kenny, Ibushi or Naito, they've all got their hardcore group of fans who would always stick with each of those guys respectively for what they know. But for me, I think Ibushi is the main one if you really had to pick one of them. He always seems to get the biggest babyface pops. He always seems to be the most popular guy going in and out of the ramp. And I think he might just edge Tanahashi in a final, but I'd be guessing if those two actually make it to the final, I could see that being quite a 50-50 crowd, and Budokan would be my expectation.
So, speaking about Tanahashi, my money is on Tanahashi winning the G1 and going on to face Kenny Omega at Wrestle Kingdom 13 for one last shot on the biggest stage. What main event do you think the Japanese fans want for Wrestle Kingdom?
Yeah, it's... we'll probably come back to my comment about 50-50. I think they'd be happy with either, to be honest. I think Tanahashi Kenny would work, and Ibushi Kenny would work. I think if you went by sort of generations, I think the younger fans are more into the Ibushi Kenny angle, whereas maybe some of the older fans who sort of view Tanahashi very favourably, given he was kind of the guy that dragged along the company in its worst times, is... they'd probably be more leaning towards him coming through. So I think it generally is split quite 50-50, which in a way would make for an interesting final, because I think both of those two outcomes in most people's eyes are very reasonable ones. So it would be very, very hard to actually pick which way that would go if that ends up being the final. So it should make for an exciting match if we end up with that.
In your opinion, and again, we are talking to Fraser Marriott, who is Mr. G1. He's attended every single one of our, not ours, I wish I was running it, but New Japan's G1 shows. Is that a main event that you think could do very well for New Japan? And we're talking about Ibushi and Kenny Omega. Do you think that is a big enough main event for the Tokyo Dome?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, one thing a lot of Japanese fans have been saying for the last 18 months or so is that they think the top four is a little bit sort of stayed, and too much of the main event storylines have been based around those four being sort of Naito, Kenny, Tanahashi and Okada. So bringing Ibushi into that mix, I think, is quite refreshing for fans and feels like something new and different from what they've seen before. And then they've obviously got the long sort of wrestling and personal history between the two of them. So I don't think there'd be any shortage of demand for fans to see that. And I think what's probably interesting for most people, myself included, is kind of how would you take the storyline of that, given that as far as we are now, but things can obviously change, you know, they've been very good friends and very close personally to one another. How would they actually set up the rivalry such that fans really want to believe that these guys sort of dislike one another enough or have some other reason to really promote that rivalry? That might be the challenge in the booking I could foresee.
With these shows, and again, we're winding down and it's coming up on the Budokan shows and G1's just about over. Who have been your MVPs? I mean, we talked about this on the last show. When we talked about this on our last podcast, who are the, and we'll do Block A and we'll do Block B, but who's been your MVP so far?
I think Block B and overall would have to be Ishii. I mean, he's had just so many amazing matches. So far that I think you just can't go past that. And I think what's been interesting about Ishii's matches as well, for me at least, is that you have the match with Goto at Kotokuen, where you could say that Ishii and Goto, they wrestle the same style, and therefore you're not surprised to see an exciting strong style match come out from the two of them. But when you look at his other standout matches, or at least the standout matches in my eyes, would be Ibushi and Omega, is that he's gone up against two guys that don't really wrestle his style and have both adapted themselves very well to his style, and they've been amazing matches as well. And it's quite nice on the undercards. They give you those clues, actually. And I think the Ibushi tag match against Ishii the day before, you could tell Ibushi was going to sort of go strong style. And I wasn't that convinced the day before. I just thought, oh, Ibushi's not going to sort of fit that. But they went really well together. So I think head and shoulders ahead of anyone else. And in fairness, he's been in B block, so he's had the best adversaries. It's got to be Ishii for me on B block. And then A block would have to be Elgin through sheer consistency. I don't really think probably has been too many matches that you'd say are going to be remembered in 30 years' time necessarily. But I think all of his matches have been really good. And I think the thing about Elgin that makes his matches very exciting as well, and it's a little bit like Yano, but on a sort of wrestling level, not a sort of comedic sort of random level, is that Elgin can conceivably beat and lose to anybody. When he's in the ring with Okada and Tanahashi, there's nobody thinking, oh, this is, you know, a guaranteed 2 points for those top guys on top of the card. They all see Elgin as a credible threat. I think the Japanese fans respect him immensely. I don't think their English is good enough to get into the dark corners of Twitter to understand what did and didn't happen over in the US, so that doesn't faze him at all. And I think he's just been exceptionally consistent. And also, I did notice yesterday afternoon, that even with this, what seemingly is quite a serious injury, he still wrestled quite impressively, doing not as many, but certainly a lot of those power spots. So I think he's done very, very well in A block. And that's been important, to be frank, because I think if you were to take Elgin out of that A block, you would really probably start having fans being a bit more vocal and just saying that the five matches you get each night on those shows is just not good enough overall.
And moving away from the wrestling, I saw on Twitter that recently you went to a post-show dinner hosted by Suichi Shibata, who's a New Japan commentator, and Masakatsu Funaki, the Pancrase co-founder. Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
Yeah, that was pretty interesting, actually. So I mentioned that sort of group of dentists and doctors and nurses and stuff that I met previously. So one of the dentists for that show in Osaka suggested coming along to this event. Now, to be frank, I had absolutely no idea in advance what this was. I've been to quite a few of these Japanese talk shows where about 80% of it goes over my head, 20% I can understand, and then sort of my friends kindly sort of translate what was in between. There was probably an older generation of fans, so a lot of them were more inclined to talk to Funaki about sort of, you know, what his matches were like 25, 30 years ago. But I think it's very interesting to see that demographic of fans. They're very, very passionate. They tend to have knowledge across all the promotions as well. Not too many of them are violently is probably the wrong word, but just sort of passionately following only one promotion. Their knowledge goes quite across. So it's quite interesting to get their take on some of the odd stuff that they're really into, and then also to get their views on some of the newer stuff. But it was interesting for me. They gave me a few insights in terms of, you know, what it was like being a fan of New Japan 10 or 12 years ago when many seats were empty, and now they see that it's much more full. So it was a nice night. We're at a Chinese restaurant, a good vibe there, and yeah, it was a nice experience and a nice way to mix things up on the tour.
And could you also talk to us a little bit about your discussions with new dad Harold May? What's he like, and what's in the pipelines for the future?
Yeah, he's a very approachable guy. I mean, I've been obviously going around all these shows. I don't know if he's gone to all of them, but what he typically does is he'll stand in the foyer. So he's done this at Kota Quen. He's certainly done it on a number of these venues we've gone to around Japan. He tends to position himself there, and all the fans can come up and have a photo with him and have a chat. And his Japanese is excellent. So he's got a lot of respect for the from the Japanese fans. He's very approachable and he's very open. When I talked to him, we sort of exchanged business cards, and he was just talking about his primary purpose really for coming along is to list New Japan within 2 years. Now, he told me that the listing he's targeting within 2 years is on what's called the Mothers Exchange, which is a smaller Japanese exchange initially. Then 2 years after that, they will list on the Tokyo Stock Exchange, which is kind of like the equivalent to the London or New York Stock Exchange for people from the UK and the US. But that's his number one priority. I haven't obviously really spoken to him about the details of kind of what formulates those timelines. And I think he's quite heavily involved in the US expansion as well. But he's very, very nice, very, very approachable. Seems to be a genuine fan as well. His Japanese is excellent, but sort of his single focus is that future listing. So be interesting to see how they go, because that topic actually came up in the dinner we were just talking about before. There are a few fans that are nervous around what are the kind of the expectations of the company and its conduct if you do become a listed company, and you've seen that with the WWE in the past. So for those of you, and I know Damon's certainly not one of them, who are fans of seeing things like Tama Tonga running out and choking fans, this may be your last chance, or at least in the next 2 years, because after that, perhaps they're going to have to rein in a bit of what they're doing.
Okay, my last question for you, Fraser. I'm a huge lover of Japanese food. Could you please tell us a bit about some of the food you've eaten on this tour, any unusual local delicacies and your personal favourites? Because looking at your photos, the 7-year wasabi and the okonomiyaki look particularly good.
Yeah, that was definitely something I targeted right from the start, which was to try the foods of all the different places. And I think, to be honest, I had a good variety of stuff and typically went for whatever was the local speciality in each place. But the okonomiyaki was actually quite incredible. So that was in Osaka. So Osaka is famous for that, and also takoyaki, which is the octopus balls. This okonomiyaki is kind of like this pancake, which sort of got like an egg batter base, and then they throw literally everything in there. So I ordered the kind of the biggest one on the menu, which is a combination of meat, pork, seafood, and pretty much everything. And they cook it right in front of you on a hot plate in probably about 10 to 15 minutes, and that was outstanding. That particular place, which I've put down on the Twitter thread, was highly recommended. I got there about half an hour before it opened in the baking hot sun and wrote my name down and was fortunate enough to be in the first group that entered. But for those of you ever targeting a Dominion show, or if they run 2 days in Osaka every year, come across for the last week of the G1, it would be good. I'd highly recommend going there. I think it was Fukutaro, quite close to Ilion Arena, conveniently as well. I'd say that would have to be the standout, and probably in second place would be Nagoya. Nagoya has a special breed of chicken called Kochin. I have no idea how they managed to make this mixed breed, but they did. And that chicken is quite a lot different to anything else you taste. And so if you ever find yourself in Nagoya, Kochin chicken is what you should be trying.
Let's continue. Just one more with the food talk, if we could, Fraser. And then one last pro wrestling question from me. And listen, you know we are huge fans. You got to give us a flavor of Strong Zero. What's the Strong Zero that's the go-to on a hot summer day for you?
I'm going to disappoint you here a bit, Damon. Oh. My alcohol intake these days is not very high. So I don't have too much insight for you on that one. I do know that you and Joe have been, and Eric and some of the other guys are big fans. But sadly, while I can tell you anything you want to know about food, which I think was your question, on the drink side, unfortunately, I've got no local knowledge for you on that to share.
Oh, so breaks my heart. But listen, I'll have somebody with a suitcase just for that sole purpose of hopefully bringing some home. I miss it so. Is there a buzz? Has anybody chatted to you about New Japan running Madison Square Garden in 2019? I know that a lot of people that I talk to over there seem to have almost like it would be for a Western person to go to the Tokyo Dome. Has anybody talked to you about Madison Square Garden, and is there buzz over there about New Japan running Madison Square Garden?
I think there is in certain respects. I think everybody, all the Japanese fans, definitely know how special Madison Square Garden is as a venue, and I think they're all very impressed that New Japan's going to go there. I think some of them are a bit nervous about it, though. I think a lot of them have memories of what happened January 2016, where WWE came in and sort of raided four or five of those top guys all at once. And I wonder if there's a feeling amongst Japanese fans that I speak to that they feel like New Japan might be prodding the bear a little bit. And I think most of them are aware of some of these new TV deals that WWE have signed. There's already a lot of nervousness amongst Japanese fans about Kenny and the Bucks going. I think the average Japanese fan assumes, and Shinsuke was a bit of an exception to that, that pretty much all their top Japanese stars will stay. They're very sort of domestic by nature. They seem to love the company. So they see the risk of any of those guys going is much lower. But they wonder about the timing of this and whether or not sort of WWE, if they can't stop the show itself, which it seems as if they won't be able to, whether their vengeance might come in the form of some of their favourite wrestlers getting signed. So that's been a bit of nervousness. I would say Japanese in general are not great international travellers. They're very passionate about domestic travel, but internationally, not so much. So I haven't really got the sense. I mean, I haven't talked to too many people about it, but certainly all the friends I have spoken to so far, none of them have sort of indicated that they are planning on attending. So it might be more Western dominated, but I certainly think they appreciate the fact it's a special venue and they're quite excited by the fact that a show will be run there.
Fraser, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us again. Where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm at Fraser Japan, so four more days to go, so please, if you've got time, follow along. I'm not sure if I have any content after the 4 days. I'll probably have to have a resting detox for a while, but yeah, follow along. That's where you can find me.
Right, and you can find us at the Super J Cast on Twitter. So thank you very much for listening to this bonus episode, and goodbye.